is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 8, season 15. It's just myself and Ryan this week. Hello, Rag.
Hello.
It's you and me. It's like old days, isn't it?
I didn't expect you to come to me that quick. I was expecting you to do a big build-up and you caught me by surprise.
There's no big build-up. It's just you and me this week, so I thought I'd just kind of say hello, come straight to you. Folks, thanks so much, by the way, for the downloads. The downloads have been fantastic recently, and we do really, really appreciate it, and thanks for sharing. And if you could do some reviews on iTunes when you do it, when you're clicking on downloading it, that would be really, really helpful. A couple of things. I'm going to go straight to it, Ryan Champion, because last week we were all together at various points and we all did our predictions.
We did.
Should we do our predictions? Should we briefly run through?
If you really want to.
Yeah. So, Jack Benyon was Sebastian Ogier, Jari-Matti Latvala and Chris Meek. Ryan Champion was Nouvelle, Tanak Ogier. Tony Simpson was Jari-Matti Latvala, Ogier, Lappi. And Trevor Agnew was Ogier, Tanak, Evans. How the hell did he get that?
I don't know, but it was quite impressive. And as he's a betting man, he should have put a bet on, because that would have been a good little haul, that one, wouldn't it?
I think it would have been a cracking haul.
And I wasn't feeling so well about mine until I listened to you read yours out. So at least three of mine were in the top four.
Mine were horrendous. Now, forgive me, and I always say this to our listeners, of course, that we always assume that you're very much up to date, the fact that the event was 3 or 4 days ago now. I was a little bit tied up personally while Rally Mexico was going on, so I've had to play catch up a little bit.
Really, you're into that sort of thing?
Steady, only for a weekend. And only in the Lake District, funnily enough. So I've been playing catch up with WRC Plus and seeing what was going on there. Dead obvious question this. Did our top three, are they the only ones that had a clean run?
Yes, they are really. So Nouvelle was fourth, punctured. Chris Meek was fifth, punctured, and everybody else was Super Rally, I think. So and even the top three would probably say they didn't have a clean run, but realistically, yes.
I've seen what happened, and there was a lot that went on, and I know Chris Meek said a couple of things, and which he's since retracted and stuff. And I don't really want to get too bogged down in that because it was heat at the moment. It's been retracted. Let's kind of move on, you know, at the end of the day. But this whole thing with Lappi's car, of course, he got passed. I think Elvin got passed as well. And then they made the decision that the stage was to be stopped. You've done Car Zero. You've been involved on rally organization committees and things like that. Bear in mind that two cars had got through at kind of rally speed, as it were. Were you surprised that they decided to red flag it at that point?
Was I surprised? There was no two ways about it. Cars could get past, and obviously the crew were on scene. They were slowing cars down, and there was space to get past. Was it in a dangerous place? Yes, it probably was. But I guess maybe it was in some ways, because it's not like there's that many cars doing the rally. Let's face it, it's not like there was another 100 cars to come through. So, like you said, there was two gone through. There was probably only another, 10 or a dozen cars to pass the scene. It was in a dangerous place, and it could have been hit. But then at the same time, something I don't know if we touched on at the time, but Monte Carlo on the first evening when Teemu Sunninen went off, Calle Rovanperä actually crashed into Sunninen's car and the stage wasn't stopped. I think the stage could have probably run, but nonetheless, it was, nowadays when you've got sort of live TV footage, the organisers could see it. They could see it was in a dangerous place, and they probably thought they just had to do the right thing to neutralise the stage. At the end of the day, it could have, if somebody had run into it, it would have done a lot of money's worth of damage. So I can see it from both sides, but yes, I'm maybe still surprised it was red flagged.
To as I say, to the annoyance of one or two, but there was a couple of ridiculous things that I think I did see floating around about tactics and things like that. You can't plan for that. That's just
and the timeline didn't work, honestly. You know, Lappi, Citroën have only got two cars at the end of the day, and for the manufacturers championship, they're not going to tell one car to go off the road. And you know, Lappi was off what I think was he maybe. There was two cars in between at least. So let's say 6 minutes in front of Ogier, 6-8 minutes in front of Ogier starting the stage. And Ogier had only just nicely got the puncture, I would suggest, before that. So the timeline didn't work. Having said that, I mean, God, talk about luck. I mean, yes, Sebastian Ogier is a fabulous driver and he doesn't make many mistakes. But he had a front wheel puncture and that would have lost him the rally. No two ways about it. And it was an incredibly lucky break on his part that the stage was neutralised. And then, as we said, not only to compound that, poor old Chris Meek going into the next stage, he's right up there fighting. And then he gets a rear puncture and that's effectively him ruled out of the rally. So, yes, Chris made some comments, but of course Chris was frustrated because, that could have been easily his first win for Toyota. And instead it was another Ogier victory.
There seems to be not more stories, but there's been definitely a little bit of discontent with regards to the rally. I've seen some quotes in various sources saying that perhaps it wasn't quite up to normal Rally Mexico standards. And there's a couple of things that screamed out to me looking back retrospectively on it, right, last night, was the fact that watching footage of somebody having to get out of a car and go and open a gate, which is just mind-blowing because you think, well, how did the car's aero get through? That was the first thing that I kind of went, well, how did Cars Aero get through? Can you shed any light on how Cars Aero might have leaped over that particular fence?
No, I assume it's blown shut in the wind or something similar. I mean, funnily enough, I remember Malcolm Wilson having a similar situation on the Scottish Rally 1 year, and we've seen it on Rally Argentina a couple of times. And yeah, well, I hate to say it, but you know, sometimes people do it intentionally. Let's give the benefit of the doubt, and it blew shut in the wind. It can happen if it isn't manned, but at the same time, you would like to think that whoever planned the stages would make sure it was well tied up. But obviously, it wasn't. And it's very strange to see, the first competitive car having to open it.
Well, I would assume, right, rightly or wrongly, that a sweeper car, well, yeah, I suppose it probably happened after the sweeper car. I've answered my own question, Ryan Champion, don't worry. I've answered my own question. And the other thing which did scream out with regards to, you know, very much discontent, although I must admit, I've seen the in-car of Lappi going over the street stage jump. He seems to have a whale of a time. While I did give a wry smile of how the car landed, and I was thinking, good job it's got all that aero on the back of the way, because I think it nearly could have went end over end. It didn't inspire confidence in a spectator stage to have a car that out of shape.
Here we are again. We're talking about man-made jumps. We're talking about making things up for the spectacle of the rally. And I see that the FIA have come out and said that they're going to come up with whatever it is, a specification for jumps. But the problem is cars have become more and more capable. And as we know now, the suspension is incredible on these cars. And to make them look spectacular over jumps, they'll jump higher, they'll jump longer, and the jumps have become bigger. And you only have to think back to our very own Wales Rally GB last year. Do you remember? I think it was Elvin over the jump in Llandudno. The car reacted really badly to it because the cars aren't set up for man-made jumps. You know, they're set up for the more normal jumps and
more crests, isn't it? It's more, you know, sharp crests as opposed to jumps.
Cars kind of go naturally airborne rather than being kicked into the air. And like I say, that one in Llandudno could have ended quite nastily. The jump actually broke, I think, in Mexico, which was obviously the problem. And then they had to stop the stage, which, you know, that just makes the whole show look terrible, doesn't it? At this level, it's a world championship and we're having to stop a stage because a man-made jump broke. And, you know, we could talk about this at length. Do we need these man-made elements to the spectator stages? I guess the casual fan likes them. We know a lot of rally fans don't. But, gosh, you're going to put them in. Please make sure they're going to at least last for the 24 cars that have got to pass over it.
apparently the reason why the jump had been moved up from last year, and they'd lost, or some of the plates to set the ramp had been misplaced or whatever it may be. So they got some replacement plates locally for the jump that weren't the same thickness, and had decided that they cried enough, relatively early on, which is why obviously it was stopped. It's things like that where you go, this is the World Rally Championship, and I guess rightly or wrongly, it's not World Rally Cross. Let's be clear on this. It's not World Rally Cross. They have man-made jumps. They want to add spectacle and everything else. That's fine. It's not Gymkhana. That's fine. And I can't imagine, for the casual motorsport fan, I don't imagine somebody at Liberty thinking, do you know what F1 needs? We need to create something man-made to make it a bit more exciting. That's what we need to do here. I can't imagine any other, top-line motorsport thinking, this is what we need to do. And what I find that a little bit troubling.
You mean like DRS?
DRS is, you can't, that's not like for like, is it? Come on.
But it's man-made, isn't it? It's the same. What I'm saying is you're interfering with what's actually going on in a premeditated way
is that more controlled though? Jesus, we're talking about a jump here and the spectators and cars getting out of shape.
Yeah, it is. But what I'm saying is they're not immune to it either. And that's what, we see it more and more in world motorsport now. We have to make it exciting. We have to, engage people more. But you're right. It could potentially be very dangerous if something like that broke when a car's going over it with spectators around. So, as I just said, if you're going to do it, make sure it's done safely. But do we need them at all? But therein opens a can of worms. You can't say you can never have them. I mean, we've had jumps in spectator stages for years. Even I remember there's one in Margam Park from 10 years ago. They built the jump bigger, so the car's got more air over a jump on Rally GB. So it's always been there. It's just now these very much man-made ones that, built out of ramps, etc., that we have always seen them. I think, like I said, it's just that they've become more and more extreme because the cars have become more and more capable. But we do have to be very, very careful with it, that it doesn't cause an issue and certainly doesn't cause an accident.
That is, and you've just kind of, the elephant in the room that I was kind of trying not to say was, that is exactly that. It's an accident, and an accident with one of those cars in the air, out of control, with spectators either side. Let's not even think anymore. Let's just take that on board and go, yeah, this isn't really what we need to be doing. It's not going to do the sport any good, I really, really believe. But anyway, there you go. I think I alluded to it last week when I was talking to Bex, and I think we talked about it at the top of the podcast, right? It wasn't the deepest entry in any way, shape or form. And, as I say, the top three cars, perhaps the only ones that didn't have any problems. But that probably does those three drivers a little bit of a disservice, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it was another incredible Ogier performance, puncture aside. We just have to accept that. But he drove very well and took really a comfortable victory in the end. But not to take anything away from Oik Tanak running first on the road. He hasn't got the experience, we touched on this last week, that Ogier has running in that position, but he did a really good job. He managed his speed on the first pass, and he came away with second overall in the championship lead. So job done for him, and obviously fantastic for M Sport to be back on the podium again. I mean, Elvin was faultless all weekend. Couldn't quite match the pace of Tanak, but I mean, that's,
Do you think and by the way, folks, we were going to have Scott Martin with us this week. He is with us next week. My bad. It didn't make into this week's pod, but Scott will be with us next week anyway. But do you think there was also an element, of he didn't go toe to toe with him in the end because he needed that finish, didn't he?
Yeah, he did need it, but then Tanak wanted the world championship points too. So, I think Elvin was pushing as hard as he comfortably could, which Oik Tanak was. So I think if Elvin could have held him off, he would have done. But I think we'd all agree that Tanak in the Toyota is probably the fastest package in the championship at the minute. So it was probably unrealistic, but nonetheless, fantastic podium for M Sport and for Elvin and Scott.
Yeah, just. Looking through, and it's not very often you see, I watched a couple of stage ends, Thierry Neuville basically conceding defeat very early in the rally. And I don't know whether it was just he felt it wasn't going to be his rally, so it was easier to concede defeat and almost just drive to the finish to get as many points as possible. Did you get that impression?
But that was after his puncture, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But I think there was an element of kind of, this isn't for me this weekend, whatever, whether the gods are saying it's not for me, do we just get points and get to the end and we'll reassess and hit the reset button?
I think it was exactly that. You know, it obviously the puncture came on the first stage, I think it was, without double checking. And, you know, after that, realistically, his chances of getting on the podium were very, very slim. And so, in actual fact, he did a good job of staying out of trouble for the rest of the rally and, you know, came away with strong points. So, you know, he was probably all right. He was clearly frustrated, but he was probably realistic and he came out of the weekend with the best he could.
Reports were saying, you know, he tried various settings and things like that throughout the rally. I don't say this loosely, I don't say it flippantly either. Is that a sign of a man that's a little bit desperate to perhaps stay on the pace? If you keep, you know, changing the car repeatedly, you know, it's tough, isn't it? It's tough. It's not making your life any easier.
No, you're right. It isn't. Engineers would say this, if a driver is chasing the setup the whole rally, he's not comfortable. He's probably concentrating more on that than he is trying to drive the car. I'm not sure everything's all well at Hyundai just at the minute, because Neville's already said that they need to bring developments to keep up with the opposition this year. Like you said, okay, he had the puncture early on. He finished, a minute and a half down. A lot of that was down to the puncture, but nonetheless, he couldn't match the pace. As we've mentioned previously, Loeb's not quite happy with the car yet. So, you know, the Hyundai probably isn't a match for the opposition at the minute. So they are going to have to work very, very hard to get on top of that. Obviously, we have a complete reset when it comes to Corsica, to tarmac. So that'll be interesting to see. But it's looking tough for Hyundai at the minute.
Do we see much beyond, you know, obviously over the last few years, we've had a dominant Sebastian Ogier, especially on Rally Mexico. And he didn't disappoint again, did he? You know, we've got, here we are again with a Citroën on the top step. And they, you know, whatever Citroën has set out to do, and we keep talking about this with their two cars, okay, Lappi had their problem, but, you know, they got really what they want. I'm sure they would have wanted Lappi to finish as well, but clearly their goal is to give Sebastian Ogier a driver's title in a Citroën.
Yeah, and he did a great job ultimately. Obviously it's two wins out of three now. The car is obviously working well. The engine was working well at high altitude, which, you know, Citroën obviously have a fantastic record there over the last few years. Corsica, would you bet against Sebastian Ogier in Corsica? Probably not. If you're a betting man, he's got to be odds on favourite still for Corsica.
Yeah. I wanted to just briefly mention a couple of drivers that, again, not having great weekends, right? And I come to Andreas and I come to Jari Matti.
Yeah, and both drivers, like you said, who need good weekends. Another one for Andreas Mikkelsen of what might have been. He was again showing good pace, but it fell apart for him. Jari Matti, the more technical issues rather than anything self-inflicted. But again, that must be frustrating for him because he sees the other cars running quite well and he's having the problems. But, you know, it does seem that Toyota were on the edge of reliability again, so it seems like that they were having charging problems. And I noticed after they'd had the problems when the cars were coming to the stop line, you know, the engines were revving very, very high. And I saw the interview with Tommy Mäkinen explaining about Latvala's issue, and he said it was at the end of the stage when the cars were drawing a lot of current and all the fans were on, the cars are very, very hot, and that's when they were at the highest risk. I also heard somewhere else over the weekend that potentially that they they don't run the alternator on stage. Now, I don't know if that's right or not. I don't know if anybody can confirm that. But I did hear that that band in about over the weekend, that they just ran on battery power, which I find hard to believe. So it doesn't draw as much energy from the engine. But maybe they do. Maybe they are trying that technology. But either way, at the end of the stage, that's when the car's at its most susceptible. And the way they got around it, I think, was revving the car much harder on the stop line.
I suppose for Yari's point of view as well, he did put times in on Saturday, which, you know, I know Andreas had a good Friday, but ultimately broke the suspension on the car. But at least Yari can clutch at the fact he was putting some, you know, decent times in on the Saturday scratch times and things.
Yeah, and I'm sure as we know all about Yari Matti and the feeling and the confidence, and he seems to be driving well, but nonetheless he's seeing Tanak leading the championship, he's seeing Meek getting solid results and sitting fourth in the championship, and he's nowhere again. So it has to be frustrating for him, but I'm sure we'll probably see a Yari Matti win a little bit later in the year, probably on gravel, because he'll have a good road position.
As we said before, not a massively deep entry, but there was some R5 cars there. Local man Benito Guerra finishing in sixth overall, and your favourite subject at the moment, WRC 2 Pro, springs to mind.
Yeah, so we saw the WRC Pro runner from M Sport finish fourth, I think, in R5, and as you said, it was a non pro entry that won R5, again underlining the confusing nature of all that, but we'll not go down that road again.
No,
but great
no.
to see an R5 win for a Mexican, for a local driver.
Yeah, because the fans over there, as ever, we're on great form as well. Fans on great form. I'll tell you one thing just before we move on from Valley Mexico. Did I get it right, or have I made this up, or did a dream, because I didn't have a lot of sleep last night? Was the power stage difference between Chris and Sebastian Ogier the closest it's ever been on a power stage?
It was something like 0.025, wasn't it? So it was 25 thousandths of a second.
Wow.
So it was officially rated, I think, at 1/10 of a second, because the official time is done to a 1/10 of a second. But it was actually 0.0025.
Yeah, and just going back to the entry, if you've got the variance of cars over there now, you've got Dave Wallingford coming back out in his R5 car. That's the guy who's tied in massively with Team O'Neill. He did Rally Mexico last year, and very unfortunately had a very, very nasty accident, and that car had to be reshelled at M Sport and everything else. And I know Matt Edwards, who was on with us last week, of course, he was out doing some driver coaching with him, I think, about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. He's out on this event, and another Irishman as well, who's been doing the forestry, he's done some of the UK stuff and everything else, but he's also been doing quite a lot over there. Barry McKenna is back out in his Fiesta over there as well. So there's a fair amount of competition starting to gather over there. So we'll watch that, and no doubt we'll catch up with somebody from the American Rally Association next week anyway. Right, Ryan Champion, we've got, before we come to the dirt competition, I've had a message for you.
Go on.
Just for you. Came in via Facebook page, of course, facebook.com/absoluterally. And hi, guys, Fab Podcast. Oh, bless you. Keep up the good work. Thank you. We'll try. Been out of the rally loop for quite a while. Ask Ryan. I'm confused about proto cars and their ineligibility in the UK. Mainly Polish-built modern silhouettes built to take Mitsubishi/Group Subaru Group M Plus mechanicals. I've seen a quote from MN from the RAC MSA saying that the category, categorically, they are not legal in the UK, but I know there are a few out there competing. Surely this is a way to win on a win-win basis on national championships. Cheap comparatively to run, modern cars to the general public's eye, and promotable and ideal from a local national marketing aspect. They are legal in many other countries, and perhaps BRC or similar championship could get a boost from their inclusion. Just cast your minds back to the ability to buy a trimmed Escort Cosworth motorsport shell and how effective that route was for the sport and for the competitors alike. Thoughts, Ashley Reed. There you go. Thank you, Ashley. Ryan Champion, thoughts.
Hello, Ashley. Good to hear you listening. Up there in Aberdeen. Right, how long do we want to talk about this one then?
Keep it short.
So Pro Tour cars, initially they were logbooked by the MSA, and as Ashley's already alluded to, they sort of originated in Poland, and the whole concept of it was that, you know, Evo 8s, Evo 9s were all getting quite tired, but ultimately the engine in an Evo is strong, it's powerful, it's cost effective. You can put in a dog box, a sequential dog box, and the running gear is very strong and very reliable. But the body shells were getting old, the cars were getting old, and the people were maybe having accidents with them, and you can't easily get body shells for Mitsubishis, or even a Subaru come to that. So the idea was that they came up with, I think it was Dyco Sport in Poland were the first to do it. You buy a cheap super mini, be it a Polo, a Fiesta, a Mitsubishi Mirage, whatever it is, and you basically reshell all the bits over. And that's effectively what was happening. Now, to begin with, the MSA were logbooking them, but then actually what they found out they were doing to build these cars, they were effectively cutting the floor plan out of the Evo and welding it into your super mini of choice. And the MSA banned them on that basis, that they were cutting the floor plans out. They are now allowed to be MSA logbooked as long as they use the existing floor pan. So basically, if you buy a Fiesta, it has to be the Fiesta floor pan and bulkheads with the Mitsubishi running gear. So you can do it, but you can't chop the floor out. That's the point, and that's I believe the legality or not. We're also now seeing the second generation of these cars, because if anything, they had one floor. You were building something like, say, a Fiesta or a Polo, but you were still limited by the geometry of an Evo or a Subaru, whatever it was based on. So you didn't have anything like the suspension travel of a modern car. What we're seeing now is the second generation of these cars are basically using R5 type suspension, so that you're getting proper travel. You're getting a modern car, but you're still getting the strong, reliable running gear of either a Subaru or a Mitsubishi. So, I think we'll continue to see more and more of these cars evolve. And like I said, they're pretty cost effective in comparison to modern R5 cars.
There you go, Ashley. I hope that fills a blank for you. It did for me, because I didn't realise what the issue was, I must admit. But all the way through that, I was thinking, but how are you going to get Mitsubishi running gear to fit a Fiesta floor pan? I must admit, I almost feel like that rule's been put in to stop it happening, because it's got to be tantamount to near impossible, isn't it?
No, there is people doing it. And I think you can modify the floor pan, because ultimately, if you look at an R5 car, ultimately, Fiesta's not four-wheel drive. So you have to be allowed to modify the floor pan to accept four-wheel drive running gear. That's allowed under FIA rules. But I think one of the key things was, as I said, they were cutting out the complete floor pan and bulkheads. So you have to retain the original bulkheads, but you can modify the floor pan.
This is Absolute Rally. Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Ryan Champion, that neatly brings us to, it doesn't really, I just think it does, our dirt competition, which we alluded to last week. And we've just been talking about Ken Block's car, we've been talking about iconic liveries, of course, with Oliver Solberg going to Subaru and Subaru bringing back their livery. You had this idea. We've got a dirt competition, folks. We've got, I'll tell you exactly what we've got in stock, so to speak. We've got a copy of Dirt 2.0 on the PS4. We've got a copy of Dirt 2.0 on the Xbox One. And we've got two copies of the game on the PC as well. Now, if you haven't already bought it, this could be quite a good competition for you to enter. Or alternatively, if you want to give one away as a gift, this could be quite a good competition for you to enter. I was struggling with a question, and as we're blessed, and I do say the word blessed, the fact that one of the guys who was involved with, you know, the testing of the game and things like that is with us, Ryan Champion, I thought I'd let him set the question. And it's quite a tricky one, Ryan Champion.
Yeah, well, we normally set a question and you all give us an answer and then we pick out a random winner. This time we're going to do it a little bit differently. So we like heritage of rallying on the Absolute Rally podcast. And also on Dirt Rally, you can, you know, you can choose different liveries on the cars, and the clever people out there actually design their own liveries. No idea how you do that, but anyway, the people somewhere on the World Wide Web can do it. So
the World Wide Web. When was the last time anybody ever called the internet the World Wide Web?
Yesterday, because the designer or whatever he was, the guy who came up with the World Wide Web was on BBC yesterday.
World Wide Web? You're showing your age, Ryan.
Yeah, no, sorry, he was on the news yesterday talking about the World Wide Web. So there you go.
All right, go on.
Move on. So
did you look on that on Ask Jeeves by any chance?
I remember Ask Jeeves. and while we're just mopping things up, it was MDV, vehicle development, so I was right with the D and the V. I just missed the M.
Okay.
Anyway, question to win Dirt Rally 2.0, we want you to come up with the most iconic livery that never was. Now, how you go about that is up to you. So what was your favourite car? What was your favourite livery that was never on that car? Is it those two together? Is it a different car? So we want you to come up with the most iconic livery that never actually happened, but we want to see some proof of it. We don't just want you to tell us about it. We want to see, however you do it, it can be hand-drawn, it can be some fancy program that does it on your computer. It can be photoshopped, anything you like, but we want to see some proof of this iconic livery that never was, and we'll pick the best one and you will win a copy of Dirt Rally 2.0.
there you go folks. So just to be clear, design a livery that never was on that car. There you go. If you can do that, get it across to us. Even if you want to draw it, use your imagination. Okay. And it'll be first come, first served. If you can email studio@absoluterally.co.uk, let us know what preference you've got, and the first person to claim the PS4 one, the first person to claim the Xbox one, we'll kind of get it, I think is probably the best way of putting it. But if you can put your preference on of what you want, what format, that would be a great help. Ryan Champion, do you have any other business this week?
I do.
Okay. Do you want to go, first on your any other business?
Yes, I can.
Okay, go.
Service fans.
Ha ha ha. Ha ha.
Now, we talk about the history of the sport quite a lot, don't we? And there's been some really cool service fans over the year. Any true rally fan loves a service fan, because that's how rallying used to be. The roadside servicing with Lancia, with 10 vans at the side of the road, 10 Iveco vans, whatever it was. Austin Rover used to use the Sherpa, but it wasn't just any Sherpa. It had a V8 engine, a Rover V8 engine of police spec in it. Borum used to use the police spec V6 engine in the Transits. You used to have GM dealer sport with the big GMCs, big V8 Chevy engine things, or the Bedford CFs, whatever it might have been. Even through to like the Mitsubishi DIRs, the Subaru DIRs with Pro Drive, the Mercedes, the big 814, that became sort of the iconic service fan. What's your favourite service fan, Tony?
I love a Transit.
A Transit, which one?
I remember, and probably because they were so close to his, you know, the reality of how close RED was to where I grew up is probably, you know, probably 10 miles or whatever. And I can vaguely remember seeing an RED service van when we used to go over the Runcorn Bridge, because they were based in Widnes. And yeah, so the Transit, probably Mark II Transit, twin wheels, with the black wheel extensions. I don't know whether you remember those at all, but they seem to have additional wheel arches on the back to kind of for the twin wheels on the back. And yeah, so.
And it would have been red if it was RED at the time.
Yeah, white and red.
XMCD, which had the car transporters in the same colours.
Yeah. I think there was a connection there.
I do remember it because I went round the Ypres rally in the back of one in about 1985.
Were you hostage child, or something? Yeah, some kind of hostage situation broke out.
I just remember sleeping in the back of this Transit during the Ypres rally. But there was some great service fans around, and people always used to come up with their own. I mean, funnily enough, we had an Andy Dawson one at one point, which was a Mark III Transit with a Turbo Technics kit on it to make it go a bit faster.
Wow.
But why am I talking about service fans? What's inspired this?
Ken Block.
Yeah,
Ken Block
exactly.
He's at it again.
And like the Cosworth or not, it's a modern twist on something original. And what I really like is not only has he done it with the car, he's done it with the service vans. They're not taking a truck with this car. As is the norm now, you take the biggest articulated vehicle you can get into a given space. No, he's built two Transits, two four-wheel drive Transits. I think they're 300 and odd horsepower each, and they've been kitted out as service vans. And if you haven't seen it, have a look on social media, have a look on YouTube. There's videos of them being built on there. But I just think it's great to see. He's built an Escort Cosworth, and he's built two proper service vans to go with it.
But modern Transits, modern twist, they're not. They're, yeah, I was going to say, yes. they're not period ones.
It's not a Mark II Transit with spotlights on the front. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Old school. Well, there you go. Yeah, my end of the business was to thank the poor marshals who put up with so much cold. Basically, the only way of describing it: snow, ice, everything on the Malcolm Wilson Rally last weekend, which we were on, right? And I have experienced so many things in rallying over the 20 odd years I've done it, but never so many variants in weather, I think it's fair to say. We started the rally in snow and ice, and then by the time we went over to the other side of Ullswater, over to Grisdale, there was people walking around in shorts. It was just bizarre. And then we went back over to Greystoke for the final stage, and we were in sleet. So we had so many variants, and it was a great event. We had a really, really good event, and fantastic, really, really well done to the team for giving me such a good car. And we were very fortunate to come away with a class win and some decent stage times and everything else. But, you know, I wasn't one of those who complained about catching cars and getting punctures. That's all I'm saying.
I like what you did there, though.
Go on.
It started out as a thanks to the marshals and ended up with being, actually, I won my class.
Well, I did.
And good for you. Good for you. And to be honest, it's good for you to have a weekend that you're actually proud of, because we've not had many of them recently.
No, thanks, mate. And bless him. I don't know who the young lad is who's doing MN these days for on BTRDA, but he asked that question. And he said, so when was the last time you won? It's about 3 years ago, actually. It was like, and I looked at him and I thought, you were probably still at school. So, but one thing that did make me feel really old, right, and you'll relate to this because we're the same age, is that I worked out that most of my competitors were nearer to Johnny's age than what they were to mine. And Johnny is my 17-month-old son.
And if you're talking about 3 years ago and this gentleman was still at school, you reckon that was when Jack Bennion had just left school?
Yeah, I know. Scary, isn't it? Scary. But
not quite Jack. But you know, you've got to have some ribbon. If you're not going to be on the show, we've got to get some ribbon in at some point.
We know we're going to get a text message now. That's what we know. So that's it. Right, for this week. We're going to, after the break, we've got Killian Duffy joining us, who's obviously the man behind On the Pace Note with Craig Parry. Talked a little bit about that, but he also does these fantastic stage end things with On the Pace Note on the Irish Tarmac. And of course, this weekend, Ryan Champion's second round of BRC. Over on West Cork. Have you done West Cork?
No, I've never done West Cork. I was trying to think, have I even been to West Cork? I think I've only been to Cork 20. I'm not even sure I've been to West Cork. But I see there's 23 R5 cars lined up, so it should be a good fight.
Genuinely, and we talk about this, Killian and I, later on, because we did that bit before we did this bit, so I'm kind of talking retrospectively, but not retrospectively, is that he thinks that anybody realistically seeded in the top 20 could be in the top 3 or 4. And you look at it and you go, wow, because you've got, I think, Tom Cage, like, car 12. You know, Craig Breen's not even car 1. Get your head around that.
No, I saw that, but I guess that's as a result of the winners from last year, etc.
Yeah. But it still seems a bit odd when you think about it. But yeah, it's just a stellar entry. Very shrewd by the BRC to obviously share some events with Irish Tarmac, because it does add some depth to them as well. And best of luck to all the BRC competitors out there. We haven't done too much of a preview for the guys in the juniors. We will talk a little bit more about the juniors next week. But yeah, Killian and I just talk a little bit about what's coming up this weekend for them, because of course he also provides pace notes for some of the competitors as well. So we've got a little bit of an insight into the stages as well. And there you go. So Ryan, are you back with us next week?
I will be, yes.
Happy days. Folks, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. Again, appreciate the download. Keep supporting us. And yeah, tell your friends, and we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, midlift crest, 86 right, minus tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 on left crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And there's a little bit of a hint who's coming up next in the podcast. You may have heard the stings over the last... well, certainly this season we've had them on because I nearly said jumped into bed. Metaphorically speaking, we jumped into bed with Killian Duffy and Craig Parry, and we'll be supporting On The Pace Note. And of course, we haven't really spoke to them about it. We spoke to Craig briefly, I think, at some point, but I thought I'd get Killian on. And the other thing about Killian is, which me being daft, didn't really think this through, Killian also does coverage for the Irish Tarmac Series. So we're going to talk to him about the upcoming West Cork Rally this coming weekend, which is the next round of the Irish Tarmac, and of course the second round also of the British Rally Championship. Stellar entry, and we're going to talk more about that. But Killian, not for the last time, but definitely for the first time, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thanks very much, Tony. It's great to be on.
Well, it's, you know, as I say, we did have Craig on, and we kind of talked about what you guys were doing and stuff. But obviously, you've got a bit more of a, you know, we know the circumstances how Craig's come to be to be putting pace notes together with your good self. But obviously, you've got a little bit of a history of doing this. Just take our listeners through, you know, because the dark art of pace notes. We have people who listen to the podcast who are fans. We have people who are drivers, co-drivers, and stuff like that. How did it come about where you started actually producing notes en masse?
Well, I suppose I'm a secondary school teacher by trade, but I was co-driving all the time. I suppose I started co-driving the Middle East, co-driving in Ireland in 2000, and then Middle East in 2003, and I would have done, you know, a lot of world championship rallies over the years, and built up the experience. I won the Irish National Championship with Aaron McHale in 2007 in a WRC Focus, and we went on to do the Tarmac Championship. Then, you know, I think it was third was the top finish in the championship one of the years. The Rally Ireland, you know, generally playing my trade and learning off different drivers. You know, I even sat with Niall McShea back in 2005 over in Azores, and you know, there's different drivers I would have sat with over the years and would have picked up and learned different things. And I then did the junior championship here driving myself in 2008 in a C2R2. And I suppose then it really gave me appreciation and notes, and that you don't necessarily have to be the best driver, but if you can put down something you can trust and, you know, drive flat out where you can and go easy where you have to, you can get good times. And then in 2010, I had no co-driving contract. I was essentially unemployed, and I did notes for a few of my friends here, and they thought they were good for Mayo Stages exactly this time 9 years ago, 2010. And then after it, I decided, you know what, I'll make a full-time go of this, and it's been fantastic. The growth has been massive, to the point where I'm sort of, you know, I can't hope to get any more here in Ireland, north and south, the border, tarmac and gravel. And then, as you said, I linked up with Craig. And myself and Craig are friendly a long time. We met in the desert in 2003 in Dubai when we actually crashed in the recce. We were upside down on a roof when he came upon us. And I would have been very, very friendly with Craig over the years. And we tried, you know, even 5-6 years ago to get into the UK. But it just didn't materialise between one thing and another. And I suppose we're busy co-driving ourselves. But unfortunately, Craig is finished up co-driving. And I suppose I was supposed to be in Qatar this week with Abdulaziz Al-Khawari. But to be honest, I'm struggling even to get the time work-wise. So I just need to focus on work and focus on growing our UK business, and also obviously keeping all my Irish customers happy. So unfortunately, I had to pull out of Qatar at the last moment, and Marshall Clark took my place. And I also, as I said, moving on to, I suppose, outside of the notes, I seen a gap there with publicity. And we did Ultimate Rally News back in 2012, where we, a number of us, Enda Bonner and a few cameramen and a producer, we interviewed drivers at the end of stages. We then edited and uploaded as we were driving between stages 1 and 2, so it was probably plus a half an hour. It wasn't completely long. We streamed it then, and it's in 2017, and it took off from that, our Facebook Live coverage.
As Facebook Live seems to have been almost tailored for rallying, providing you got 4G. And I I've banged on about this. I was presenting live stream coverage for the British Rally Cross, you know, five years ago. And, you know, that we used to have an outside broadcast truck, you know, we had cameramen, it was all hardwired and everything else. And then all of a sudden.
Very expensive.
And Facebook Live almost is kind of being like a godsend to rallying, you know, to do all these things. And you look at, you know, you were ahead of the game, really, but you look at it now and there's so many people who are using Facebook, you know, well, Rallycross, WRC used it on Mexico and things like that.
It actually, you know what, as I said, Andy Walsh and myself, Ross, that started in Mayo in 2017, we had no idea. We just went with our phones. And then on the way home, I was getting like calls off people that said, you know, will you do it for more events? And at the time, you know, I have a young family. I was like, no way am I doing this every Sunday. Like, and then, you know, obviously the entries were down at the time in Ireland. I was like, well, there's a business opportunity here. Why not take it? And, you know, it's not like work, like, okay, you're gone most weekends, but I'm enjoying, I'm chatting to people I know, I'm chatting to customers, I'm chatting to friends of mine for years, and I'm just asking them how the rally's going for them. And, at the time on the Pace Notes Facebook page, I had, I think 1,200 followers. That's just done 2 years ago, and now we've over 17,000 followers. And in Galway was our biggest number of devices online at the end of stage one. It was 1,400 devices. So that's minimum. We had 1,400 people watching, but you know you get two or three people watching some devices, and so that was brilliant. It was really fantastic. We're breaking all our figures. We had over 2 million views last year between all our videos, and it's great. You know, it fits. You know, it's we're doing it with our phones. It's Andy and myself. We're doing, you know, I do stage one, he does stage two. He interviews all the crews then generally before service. And, you know, to cover everyone, because everyone is important in the rally as car number one, whether you're, you know, the front of the field or the back of the field, there's people that want to see how you're getting on. So that's really, really important to us. It fits our model fits. You know, it's relatively cheap for people to advertise. And it's cheap for us to host, you know, and there's loads of ideas you could do, you know, you could use cameras, you could use, you know, mixing stations and everything like that. But then it has to be a fit. It has to fit for what people are prepared to pay. And I think, you know, we don't charge the viewers. And I think it's working well at the moment.
Good man. Before we move on to this coming weekend, it is as simple as, you know, because again, you know, we spoke at us before we started recording. We genuinely have listeners all over the world. Ryan, myself, Jack, Trevor Agnew, we always talk fondly and we always talk about the unique Irish tarmac and how special it is and everything else. So our listeners all over the world, dead easy, log onto Facebook, facebook.com/
on the pace notes.
And yes, it's all there. It's all this.
Yeah, and just say you can get a notification every time we go live. So we'll be covering every single stage. We mix it up with, generally we're at the end of every stage, and also where we can, we get some action as well. We do, you know, unofficial split times, and it's easy to follow. And as I said, if people set their notifications when we go live, they'll get a notification, and they just press on the notification, and there you go. Live footage of West Cork.
Folks, that's where it is now. That brings us to West Cork. And do you know what? We continually get proved wrong, Killian, on this podcast, because we've been really concerned, both Ryan, myself and Jack, and we always talk about the concerns of the costs of running an R5 car. And it seems to be just coming back to bite us on the bum, not to put too fine a point on, because you look at this entry and it's not just the number of cars, it's also the quality of drivers driving those R5 cars as well, which I think is, you know, I know there was we've had the classic eras of where rally cars over course doing, you know, the Irish tarmac back in the day, but I think this is as healthy as it's been for a number of years.
Oh yeah, rallying's on a crest of a wave. I was only talking to several people over the last couple of days, and we're saying, like, you know, even 2 years ago when you're going to an Irish rally, it didn't feel like you thought you were nearly going alone. There was no buzz. Whereas like Galway, big buzz, you know, even Burr, the first round of the national championship, there's great buzz, great atmosphere. Same West Cork. Look at the lineup play; it's fantastic. Like, and to have the BRC coming over, it's brilliant. But the lineup is incredible. Like, when you see the likes of Tom Cave at number 12,
yeah,
and Marty McCormack at number 11, and they're not out of place there. Like, they're not; they shouldn't be. They can't really complain about where they're seated. You know, and anyone really in the top, you know, 20 could finish in the top five. And it's brilliant. It's going to be a brilliant race. And West Cork is a unbelievable challenge for crews. It's one of the most difficult events I make notes for during the year, because the speed is so high on the stages. And it's just, you know, it's really, you could get caught out very, very easily, you know, just carrying too much speed after a sequence of bends into a real slow one. And it's just it's a real commitment event, real big commitment event.
Is this one of those, Brian and I obviously have done Ulster and places like that, and we always talk, I suppose, historically about when we go over there, sometimes there's quite a lot of residue that can be dragged onto the roads. A lot of these stages, are you going in between kind of farmers' fields and stuff like that? You know, is not to put too fine a point on it, is there going to be deposits on the road that are going to certainly mix it up?
It's not too bad, because West Cork, generally the grip is quite good. The tarmac, the quality of the tarmac wouldn't be shiny or slippy really, and for the majority. Now, over the years, you would have seen the weather has been actually colder than it has now. It's quite mild at the minute. Like, I had to make the notes very late for West Cork last year because the snow was so bad down there. And, you know, fast forward 12 months, the weather's really mild here. Now, that has had a knock-on effect where you have a lot of the farmers now, you know, going about putting out slurry in the fields, and there's a bit more agricultural traffic on the road. So when I was making the notes 2 weeks ago, I did notice that the roads were, you know, had a bit more mud than normally would have. And now I was talking to people that were wrecking at the weekend, and they said a lot of it has gone from the recent rain. So the stages should be in great condition.
Have you dared take a look at a possible weather forecast? Have you started to pack your bag ready to go and do the coverage?
Yeah, I have. I think pull-ups and a good jacket and a hat and an umbrella is required. At the moment, I think it's to be wet, I think, for Saturday morning. Then I think it's going to dry up then, but it's quite blustery and windy. So it'll be interesting. You know, the tyre choice of the first loop is going to be a gamble. You have the famous ring stage just on off it. And it's there's not one easy stage there. There's not one stage where you can sit back and just get a time. You know, like if people are on top of their game, there's a lot of time to be got on every stage. And to be honest, the curveball stages for me are the first two Sunday morning. They're the most difficult. They're very, very difficult to get a flow on. And, there's time in every stage up to the last stage of the event. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, people won't be able to just relax no matter what position there is. There's going to be traps in all the stages, and there's just going to be time to got if someone's on a mission.
The obvious go-to on when you look at the entry list is, and again, I find it bizarre, and I understand why it happens, but maybe the people, you know, overseas, if they're looking at this, you know, Craig Breen at car two. Which is mind blowing to not see number one on the door, but you know, I get obviously, you know, the history of Donna Kelly and everything else, but to see Craig at car two, and he came on after he did Galway, and you know, he said, don't be, you know, the pace is as hot as anything, you know, the pace is there, and you know, he looked like he was doing big skids and having fun on Galway, but you know, he said he was committed, you know, that he wasn't going out just to make, you know, for fun, and he won easily. He had a big fight on his hands.
He had, like, but look back through the history books there, Alistair Fisher, Alistair Fisher has probably led every junior championship there is to lead at world championship level, and often he makes silly mistakes during those years. You look back when Dan Barrett was sitting with him, like they led most of them junior events, even when they were against Craig Breen. And so that's the caliber of driver you're dealing with Alistair Fisher. Now, I do think match practice and speed and confidence is going to be a bit different in West Cork. I think the stages would suit, you know, Craig more in West Cork than Galway. Like Galway, you could get caught out very, very easily by carrying another 5 mile an hour into a corner. Whereas West Cork is a bit more predictable from the point of view that if you trust your notes and you have good commitment in the car, then you're gonna get time. So I possibly would say Craig could be ahead of everyone else in West Cork by a small bit more. I'm not saying a huge bit, just a small bit more every stage.
There's no dominant force as such. I know there's a lot of Fiesta R5s, but there's also quite a few Skoda R5s, and we're starting to see Hyundai's appearing more now as well.
Case has three of them there this weekend. He has Tom Cave, he has Manus Kelly, and also Alan Carmichael. So the Hyundai's are making an appearance, and so they're a good car as well. So there's, you know, there's a nice mix of machinery up this weekend.
What's the, you know, I think the go-to has been historically since R5's come in over there. I know a couple of people, obviously, you know, Keith Cronin, of course, had that association with Citroën Racing. So I know he took a DS3 R5 over there, and then obviously then jumped ship over to the M Sport car. Is it horses for courses over there? Or, you know, because, you know, back in the day, and the reason why I'm going to this is back in the day, of course, ProDrive, probably their biggest pool of customer base, was guys doing the Irish Tarmac series, and you know they even developed special dampers to do the Irish Tarmac. You know, is the one car that stands out for you, Killian, when you're out watching? You know, when you're out obviously talking to these guys, or do you think we've got probably as a level playing field as what we've ever had across the marks as well?
I think it's a level playing field. I think the attraction of the Fiesta in Ireland is it definitely works. You know, you have great support, great service from M Sport. They're, you know, you can have next day delivery on any part. So, you know, that's probably why the Fiesta is more popular than any other car. You know, is the Skoda better? Like equal drivers, they're all thereabouts, to be honest. You know, but just the Fiesta, as I said, it works very well in Ireland. It's relatively easy to get a setup for it, and relatively easy for guys to get comfortable in them. So, like, I think that's why they're more popular. Like, would I say a Fabia is better or a Hyundai is better than the Fiesta? No, I think they're all pretty much level. It's down to the driver, I think, more so than anything.
The reason why I asked you that, and I'm going slightly off on a tangent at the moment, of course, you know, there is going to be an announcement that a Proton is coming to the Irish Tarmac, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how that combination, of course, Eugene Donnelly coming back, you know, he did a couple of outings early last season in the Hyundai, but now he's in the Proton, and we've got another mark. Do you think that Eugene's still going to be able to mix it with these guys?
Depends. You know, last year he had some great flashes of speed. But if you want to beat everyone, you have to be equally on the best everything. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the car. It's unproven on tarmac. But, you know, if you're coming, you have to be on the best tyres. You have to be in the best car or equal car, or else it is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing. It's just hard to know.
One name that is familiar and also unfamiliar perhaps to guys maybe looking at entry lists, of course, is the name Cronin. Now, of course, we all know the heritage that Keith had, both in the Irish Tarmac and, of course, the British Rally Championship, multiple British champion. Keith omitted from entry lists this season, but younger brother Daniel Cronin seems to be now getting the push from the family and everything else, which is great to see. How is he coming along, Killian? Is it daunting footsteps for him to try and follow
him? I think Daniel's creating his own his own credibility. I think he's, you know, aside from what Keith has done or, you know, won, I think Daniel's happy to do his own he's happy to do his own rally and you know, his pace last year on the Easter stage was fantastic at times. It's just to get the consistency now is what he needs to do. But I think he'd be a strong force down in West Cork. I mean, he's from Bantry, which is down in West Cork. So he's going to know the roads. He's going to know the grip level. So I think he'll get a strong result.
Now, we get to the point of the conversation, which everybody always dreads, is the fact that we flippantly always try to predict the outcome of things. And, you know, obviously you mentioned before, we've got the guys in the British Rally Championship. Some guys registered, of course, for both championships as well. Very shrewd management by the BRC guys to make it probably as attractive as possible for guys to register for both. So you've got your reigning British champion, of course, Matt Edwards coming over. Matt, we've had Matt on the program, and I've done some work with Matt as well. Almost unassuming in his driving, not dramatic, but incredibly fast. But where do you see somebody like that coming over and mixing it with the locals?
Well, to be honest with you, like, Matt is a fantastic driver. I think he showed that in the Isle of Man. And generally, you know, the Isle of Man's high banks both sides, like West Cork. The road is quite very committed, gets narrow. You know, commitment levels are high in the Isle of Man. To be honest with you, I fancy Matt to have a good run. You know, a good run. Can he win? I don't think so. Can he be in the top three? I would say he'll be, you know, third or fourth. I'm guessing. I could be wrong, but that's where I can see him, because it's a long 2 days. I mean, you know, we always make predictions on that everybody finishes, but you know that's never the case.
No.
I could see Matt. You know, it might take him a few stages to get into it, but again, you know, he's Patrick. On the notes, Patrick's very experienced in West Cork and Irish Rally, and you know that's going to be a help as well. And I could see Matt knocking on the door at the top three, maybe third, fourth overall, and maybe, you know, that's where I'm thinking. You know, I think Craig Breen will win, but I think it's going to be a massive tussle then for second and third. But I think it's a steady head, someone there that can get through the event, you know, be quick and undramatic, as you said, Matt is often.
but can pick up the stage times.
There's one driver that I really want to see, and you know, I don't really know him, to be honest with you, but I've got a little bit of a soft spot because obviously I've seen him go through the juniors as well. It'd be good to see Callum Devine get a nice clean run, and maybe that'll extend his season a little bit as well, because obviously, like everybody, he's fighting for budget.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Callum's a fantastic driver. Where can he be? I think he's got to be in the mix as well, in the top five anyway as well. You know, as I said, there's about 20 drivers for
top That's staggering. It's staggering when you look at the entry list, isn't it? It really is.
It is unbelievable. Like, and you keep looking down, like even for spectators, I mean, they don't need to move from stage to stage. You know, you could just go to stage one and watch the whole field through it, because even I know from Irish Rally and the quality running the whole way back to the last car, everyone's going to be pushing, everyone's going to be going hard, and even the quality of cars are very, very good throughout the field. But like Callum, you know, he was in West Cork last year. He did it in an R2 Fiesta, I think, last year. And, you know, he had a good run. He committed driver. He'll know the stages. I think, again, another person for a top five, knocking on the door of the top five, definitely.
Folks, we could literally go through every driver genuinely in the top 20. Go and check it out. EWRC, our friends at EWRC, results are always great for this type of thing. Go and check it out. You can click on the drivers, of course, and you can see what they've been doing before, of course, as well. Now, there's one name that does scream out at Car 27, and I'm sure you're going to look forward to having a chat with Mika Hirvonen, coming out in a historic car, a historic Mark II Escort. He's obviously been rallying on snow and ice and gravel and stuff like that. I don't know how much on tarmac he's done in a Mark II since his retirement, but exciting as well.
Oh, it's brilliant to have Mick over. Again, it just adds to the buzz of having Craig, you know, for Galway and now West Cork, and now we've Mick as well on top of that. I think he's going to be surprised at the level. You know, even when Craig drove a Mark II Escort a number of years ago against these modified guys, he wasn't winning. And you know, like, you've Gary Kiernan there. John Dalton, I think, from Wales is going to be the man to beat in the Darien. He comes back to West Cork nearly year after year. He had a few years he was missing, but he showed his speed last year against Gary Kiernan. Gary won, but Gary was in the Proton last year. He's back in his familiar Escort. So it's just very, very difficult to see where Mikko will finish. Again, you know, he'll be consistent, I think. Probably, I'd be hoping he'd be in the top three in the national section. You know, there's Damien Torres. There's endless amounts of drivers I could mention that. I would say, I'm guessing, I think it'll be, you know, probably John Dalton, Torres or Kiernan, and then Mikko Hirvonen, I'm guessing.
Fantastic. Well, again, I'm not going to predict any, because my predictions go completely and utterly out the window, as we discussed at the top of the podcast when we got Rally Mexico. So fundamentally wrong with our predictions. So there you go. Listen, Killian, you're a busy man. The folks obviously can go onto facebook.com/ on the pace note.
On the pace note.
And
yes.
Check out what's going on there. And folks, as I say, keep supporting the podcast, keep downloading, keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word. If you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that makes such a difference. But we do appreciate the download, and thank you to the guys on the Pace Note. Also the guys, of course, at Kielder. We wouldn't be here without them either, but we'll be back same time, same place, new little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.